WBSM presents The Tim Weisberg Show, streaming live on WBSM.com and the WBSM app. Call 508-996-0500. Send us app chat messages and open line voicemails using the WBSM app. Now, The Tim Weisberg Show.
Welcome back in. Third and final hour here on Monday morning. That means it is time for our weekly conversation with New Bedford City Council President Shane Burgo. Good morning, sir. How are you doing today?
I'm good. How are you?
Doing all right. How was your weekend?
It was great. I was pleasantly surprised that the weather held out for all of our events. The weather is very tricky. I feel like, if you look at it too early or too late, it can switch up on you. It was looking cloudy with a chance of rain, and we had the Bay State Girls Softball League starting us off on Saturday for their opening day, and it ended up being actually a really beautiful, sunny afternoon for them, as well as Wailing City Youth Baseball League celebrated their 75th anniversary. So they had another beautiful Sunday. So I was actually really happy this weekend because the weather really held out for those two opening day events. It's a really touch and go during this time of year. And recently we've seen the weekends have just been rained out. So I was really happy for those two organizations, especially for our Wailing City Youth Baseball League, celebrating such a milestone, 75 years. I was joined by a number of my colleagues there Council at Large Brian Gomes and the Ward 2 Council Maria Giesta, and I also believe Council at Large Linda Morad put together a number of citations for us to present that day to all the executive board members and everyone that has really kept this league going for 75 years strong. And what was really special for me was getting, because I haven't been following along the league, I'm only 31. So I haven't been here for 75 years, but getting to see all the people that have been with the league for this long strain, they brought out, past coaches, past managers, past members, a gentleman there that had been there for 50 years, came out to the line. So it was great to see really the history right there in person. Even the first baseball player, the first girl that kind of integrated the baseball league. I believe her name is Tammy. I'm blinking on her last name, but really, showcasing the long history of the Wailing City Youth Baseball League that's kept it alive for 75 years here in New Bedford, and just really the strong community support. So I was really happy to see the weather hold out and how many people came out for that, especially I think it was Lenny DiNardo, who's the 2004 Red Sox World Champion. He brought his World Champion ring for us all to try on. So that was really exciting for all of us. And I think even for the kids there that got to experience that.
The only World Series ring I tried on was Larry Lucchino's ring, because when I used to work at a diner, he came in one day for lunch and he was just talking to everybody at the counter, and he's letting everybody try it on. And I was the last one to try it on because I was like, no, I'm a sports writer. Like, I've covered stories with you. Like, I'll feel weird doing it. He goes, just do it. Just put it on. Everybody else has. So I did. And he goes, all right, now go cook with it. And then, just bring it back before I leave. So I'm back there, like, making people's hamburgers or whatever with a World Series ring on, just hoping that nothing fell out of it, like, onto the grill.
They're heavy too. Yeah. It's like, I didn't realize the weight of
ring. And those were relatively modest rings compared to some of the championship rings you see today. Mm-hmm. So like, like a Super Bowl ring now is like four times as heavy as that Red Sox ring. It's crazy.
Yeah, and I really appreciated his message too, because he had pointed out that he started out in a baseball league similar to Wailing City, where I think he mentioned how Wailing City was way better than any league that he started out in. And he mentioned how, 8, 9, he was a terrible baseball player. And he would get up to the bat, he'd strike out, and but he kept trying. 8, 9, 10 years old, and if it wasn't for him, his dad, his coaches, he probably would have given up. But he just kept trying, and he's, you know, win, lose, or draw. You just keep showing up, and he was just kind of showing the parallels between baseball and life. How you're going to strike out every now and then, but as long as you keep showing up to bat, there's that opportunity to, you know, hit a home run, all these different metaphors that they,
but they work.
But yeah. So, and then obviously, as you know, he ended up winning a World Series, championship ring. So it, I think it really resonated, with all the kids there, to, all the different, ways that this league really shows up for them, not just on the baseball field, but in life. And, right. and you saw that with, as I mentioned, all the adults that came back for the 75th anniversary, and how this league has really changed their lives for the better.
And we've mentioned before, last week, I think we talked about just a little bit about how people stay with the league even after their mm-hmm. kids have gone on. But what has always kind of impressed me about the Whale is that they also stay with the kids too. So mm-hmm. like when those kids go on to high school, college, become adults, like these coaches, these people that run the league, they stay in touch with them. They're still part of their lives. And that really doesn't happen anymore in a lot of these sports leagues, because it's usually another kid's parent who's just coaching because they have to, or another kid's parent who's coaching because they want to make sure their kid gets the most playing time. You know, it's not like and I don't mean this to sound in a negative way, because it comes with a lot of connotations, but it's almost like the league today is the league that it was in the 1950s, you know, like with you cared about the coach, cared about the kids cared about the coach. They were part of the family. They were part of your shaping of you growing up. Mm-hmm. And it still goes on. So that's why I think it's lasted 75 years. It's because just good people involved in running it, and then good people wanting to come back and give back to it as a result.
Certainly.
So, and if anybody, you know, wants to call in and mention any of that, 508-996-0500, or any questions for the council president. But one of the things we didn't get to talk about last week, and we said we would do it this week because we had more time, was the discussion and the vote amongst your colleagues on the moving up of the preliminary election date. That is not happening now. Mm-hmm. Now, with over a week since that vote happened, have you heard anything from the election commission about, you know, how tight the window is going to be on some of these things now?
Yeah, so I think it's going to be the option for the election commission to still move forward with vote by mail, because we don't want to take away that option. It's going to be challenging for them. It's going to be challenging for those who want to participate with vote by mail. That's why so all of the other municipalities that participate in vote by mail, every other one other than New Bedford, we are the only ones that have opted not to give the extension here, have decided not to give our election commission the extended time. But not just the elections commission. This is a part of the messaging that I was trying to put out there to explain to my colleagues and to everyone why it was so important to move this date. It wasn't to confuse anyone or any other reasoning out there that people were trying to mislead. It was simply to allow people the option to get their ballots mailed out to them. We know now that the mailing system is not as efficient as it has been in the past. And so when you're mailing letters or what have you, it takes a little bit longer than it has in the past. So giving the mailing system a little more time to get your ballot to you, give you your time to look at the candidates and make your decision, and then mail it back. All of that takes time. And then also the part that I think some people might not understand or realize is, unlike a federal race, you know, in a federal race for president, when you do mail-in balloting, you can mail it, and as long as it's postmarked by election day, it can be counted afterwards. But in a local municipal election, it has to be counted by 8 p.m., which is the close of polling on election night. So that's the biggest difference. You know, so I you know, had some conversations with people that I think, had conversations. Like, for example, a former mayor, Scott Lang, had an opinion on the matter, but he didn't have a lot of the information or facts on it. He was speaking merely just, I guess he had explained to me that he just got a phone call, I guess, by someone on the radio, and he was just kind of shooting off the hip of based on what he was heard. But after hearing more of the details about the fact that the mailing system's not, you know, he even said himself at the law firm that he works at, sometimes it takes him two weeks or longer to get something that was mailed to him. So he understands it, that time frame is not long enough. But so, you know, hearing more of the facts, he realizes, oh yeah, that is a problem. But he still thinks that maybe he doesn't want to change the date, but for different reasons, he, you know, believes that people need more time to make their decision because September is not a great plan after Labor Day. You know, I'm sure there's plenty of different arguments for why. But again, the frustration I had was, as I mentioned in my remarks on the council floor, were that we have preliminary elections in September all the time. So that's why I was really mystified by that argument that people made, was we have preliminary elections in September all the time. I don't know why that would be difficult for people to kind of wrap their heads around.
And you mentioned that this is going to put more pressure on the Election Commission and the work that they have
staffing,
to do.
Yeah.
But it's also going to put more pressure on the Secretary of State's office, too, because they're the ones that are get involved in a lot of this. And then I don't think they're going to look too kindly on New Bedford being the ones that, you know, work for them.
And they're already disappointed. I think that they were watching New Bedford to see. They're the ones who obviously sent it back to say, you need to reconsider this. That's why their first deputy secretary sent us a letter back saying, like, this doesn't look good. This doesn't make sense. Mainly, too, because I think the other part of the time frame, we keep saying there's a 4 weeks worth of time between the preliminary and the general. But really, it's 3 weeks of time because if I'm remembering the date now, it's October 7th is the preliminary election date. And then the general is on November 4th. However, the way the state law works is, so the preliminary election will be on October 7th. When those results come out, if there isn't a recount, let's say there is no recount happening, it still takes 1 week by state law for the results to be certified. So technically the state, as you're mentioning, like the Secretary of State's office or Secretary of Commonwealth's office, doesn't certify and print us and give us the ballots for a whole week. So we won't be able to our Elections Commission's office won't be able to mail out those ballots until October 14th, that's 7 days. So really you have a 3 week window of time to be mailing out ballots and hopefully get them back in that 3 week time span. As I mentioned, it's not a matter of postmarking. You have to receive it. The Elections Commissions have to receive it by 8 p.m. on November 4th. That's the election day on that Tuesday. So that's where the difficulty comes in. Now, if there happens to be a recount thrown into the mix, that makes the window of that 3 week window even shorter. And so this is why every other municipality has opted to extend it. Our date was supposed to be, or the proposed date was September 16th. Some municipalities had gone even
September 9th.
Yeah, further out. So this is why I think the Secretary of Commonwealth's office is a little concerned about it, because they've actually recommended maybe we should opt out of doing vote by mail entirely.
Because which would be the council's decision.
Well,
the council would have to approve. Yeah.
The election commission and the mayor's office would send it to us as saying we should opt out, and then the council would vote to say, yes, okay, let's opt out. And based on some of the commentary from my colleagues, it sounds like they would want to opt out.
Well, I was going to say, do you think that is the predominant feeling on the council, is that they'd rather not have mail-in voting altogether?
Well, yeah, I would say yes and no. It's interesting. Some of the conversations I have with my colleagues that were opposed to changing the date, oddly enough, they didn't want to jeopardize vote by mail. That's what I heard from a number of them. So I don't think that they would opt out. They want vote by mail because a number of our constituents, as I mentioned, utilize vote by mail. Which
older
is,
folks vote and older folks like vote by mail.
Yes. And a number of our population here are vote by mail. And so I just, you know, I don't think that they would opt out, because I think that would cause a lot of disruption. Especially, I think that's, if you look at the data that our election commissioner, Manny DiBritto, had presented with us when we first started vote by mail, in 2021. And what I mean by that is obviously we've had absentee balloting for people who have that actual cause in Massachusetts, whether you were disabled or, you know, away fighting in the military or elderly. There were different, you had to have an actual reason or just cause to vote by mail. Now we have vote by mail for any reason. That was a huge win, I would say, for any voter, because again, as I mentioned before, we want to make voting as accessible as possible. So now in 2021, we opened up vote by mail for everyone for any reason. And so we saw, I believe that if I'm remembering off the top of my head now, it was like 377 ballots. Very low. Wasn't that, you know, it was like, oh, okay. But then by 2023, the next municipal election and the general election, you had over 1,000 people saying, yes, I want to do vote by mail. So that's why they're seeing the trend going up, where they're saying, okay, well, by 2025, this now this municipal election, that over 1,000, it might go even higher.
And just to clarify, this is people who have requested a ballot sent to them. You're not just mass mailing ballots out to registered voters.
Correct. Yeah, and that was the other misconception, was that, like, you know, what I will say, I think that what people are misunderstanding is, I think what was occurring during COVID, for example, was to update people's voter status was if you had like your last known address, people would send out for the elections office, might ask you to update to say, are you still living here? Are you still registered to vote? But we were, the elections office was never mailing out just regular ballots to people's addresses for them to fill out. I know there was some kind of lie, I'll just say it like that, lie that there were ballots being mailed out and that somehow undocumented people were taking ballots from people's mail. And I shouldn't laugh because it really, you know, it's not funny, but to me, all I can do is laugh because the crazy things that are said are just, it's ridiculous. But it's not funny because then real people hear that and they say, yeah, I heard from this person who is an elected official or whoever that they're mailing out ballots and these individuals are stealing them out of people's mailbox and that's how they're voting. Or the next thing you hear is, oh, dead people are voting or this is happening. It's like, well, no, none of that. There's no actual facts of that actually happening.
And you hear about, you know, documentaries made about ballot harvesting and this and that. And then you don't hear about the fact that those documentaries end up in a lawsuit and then people, mm-hmm. they have to come out and say that the stuff they had was wrong. We've got to take a break here. When we come back, we'll go to the news and then we'll have more discussion with Council President Burgo and your questions, 508-996-0500. And you can also send them in via app chat on the WBSM app. We will be right back. All right. Before we go into the news with Mike Roberts, let's take a quick call. Good morning. You're on with Council President Burgo. Hi, you're on the air.
Hey, Tim, can I just make a quick comment about Alcatraz?
Sure.
Correct me if I heard you right. You said that Alcatraz is a national park.
Yes.
That Trump would be closing. And you said it's a dumb idea. And you implied that all the Trump supporters, you didn't say dumb, you said stupid. And you said all the Trump supporters, you implied that they're stupid, too, because I guess you don't like Trump.
I said if you think it's a good idea, you're stupid.
Okay, so I just want to, have you ever been to Alcatraz, Tim?
I've never been, no, but I don't need to go to know that it's not a good idea.
Well, you don't know what you're talking about. It's not a national park. It's run by the National Park Services, but it's not a national park at all. It's a historic landmark. So,
okay, so number one, you got me on a technicality. Number two, it still doesn't make it a good idea to reopen it as a prison.
It's very misleading to your listeners because you don't know what you're talking about.
Wait, so you're going to call up to defend Donald Trump by calling me misleading?
Here's the next thing that you don't know what you're talking about. You say Trump is very imperfect president. Like, no, there's no doubt about that. Have you ever met Trump?
No, and I don't need to meet him either to have an opinion on him.
Okay.
Have you met him?
Alcatraz and I've met Trump, and let me tell you something.
Okay.
He's not stupid, but you sound stupid when you just say things that you don't know what you're talking about. It's like, did you even graduate from college? Where did you go to college?
Do you know what you sound like when you call up and just defend some of his most moronic ideas?
No,
you sound like a sycophant.
You have no idea. You're on a little radio station in New Bedford.
But yet you felt the need to call up and talk. You felt the need to call up and call into the radio station. So it must not be that little, because you obviously care about what my opinion is.
No, I think your listeners should know that you
sound triggered to me, sir. You sound triggered.
No, you where did you even go to college? Do you have a college degree?
Does it matter?
Trump has an Ivy League degree. Did you go to any college, a junior college?
Yeah, I went to the University of Massachusetts Dartmouth, as I've mentioned many times, if you actually listen to this show, instead of just being some random person that called in because I said something about your dear leader.
No, he's not my dear leader, but you sound like, if you ask the average American, well, who do you think is more intelligent, Trump or Tim Weisberg?
What a stupid comparison to make, sir.
You're a moron.
Okay. Thank you, idiot. Here's the thing. You can call up and you can debate me on my points, but you don't have any more right to an opinion than I do. Okay? So if you want to call up and have a discussion about why I think that you're stupid for supporting a stupid idea, I'm happy to do that. Because that call just proved what an idiot you are. So feel free to call again and I'll tell you again what an idiot you are and expose you for the moron that you are, as I just did. Anyway, we got to go into the news. We'll be back in a few moments with more with Council President Burgo, who I don't think you've ever been to Alcatraz either, right?
No, I haven't.
But did you know it's not a national park? It's run by the National Park Service, but it's a historic landmark. It's not a national park. So just keep that in mind. All right, we'll be back after the news. Take it away, Mike.
Student loans coming due, getting ready to choose a new pope, and President Trump says no plans to run in 2028.
From the Cottage Street Motors WBSM Newsroom, this is WBSM News.
Brazilian police say they stopped a bomb attack planned for a Lady Gaga show over the weekend at Copacabana Beach in Rio de Janeiro. Authorities say the suspects are part of a group that promotes hate speech and the radicalization of teenagers. Investigators say the group recruited others for a planned attack that would have included Molotov cocktails and improvised explosive devices. No one was injured. The concert continued as planned with over 2 million people in attendance. President Trump says he's directing the Bureau of Prisons to reopen and expand historic Alcatraz Federal Penitentiary. He went on to say that Alcatraz will house America's most ruthless and violent offenders, adding that it will serve as a symbol of law, order, and justice. Alcatraz sits on a small island about a mile away from San Francisco. It served as a prison from 1934 to 1963. Cardinal Timothy Dolan and other Catholics are criticizing President Trump for the posting of an AI-generated image of himself dressed as the Pope on the White House X account on Friday.
I hope he didn't have anything to do with that.
Are you offended by that?
Well, you know, it wasn't good.
The image is drawing outrage from some Catholics. The New York State Catholic Conference issued a statement Saturday saying there is nothing clever or funny about this image, Mr. President, adding the cardinals are about to enter a solemn conclave to elect a new successor. Do not mock us. I'm Scott Carr in Washington.
Federal officials say the government will begin collecting defaulted student loan payments beginning today. The collection efforts will be the first since the start of the pandemic. The Trump administration said the debt will be collected through a Treasury Department program. The U.S. Department has not collected loan payments since March 2020. Officials say the last 5 years, student debt has risen to over $1 trillion. The real ID deadline is on Wednesday.
Brace yourself if you're flying in the coming days and weeks for long lines and delays at the airport. Why does it matter? Because Wednesday, May 7th is the first day a Real ID compliant license or another acceptable document is needed to board a commercial aircraft in the U.S. The new identification requirement also applies when visiting military bases and secure federal buildings like courthouses. A real ID is a state-issued driver's license or identification card that meets federal security standards. I'm Lisa Carton.
A bronze statue of President Trump is now on display in South Dakota. Trump's life-size statue is the newest addition to the City of the Presidents in Rapid City, a private arts project that makes statues of all sitting presidents. Republican Congressman Dusty Johnson attended Saturday's unveiling and sent the president a video of the event. Trump's statue will be housed at the Rapid City Visitor Center for the summer. And President Trump says he has no plans to run again. He was asked about his website selling Trump 2028 gear, and he said he's not looking to run again. He just wants to have four great years. Trump added there's a lot of good Republicans that could be president in 2028, but he said he's not endorsing anyone at this time. Jury selection in Sean Diddy Combs' trial starts today in a federal courtroom in Manhattan. The disgraced rapper and music mogul facing several federal charges, including sex trafficking and prostitution, where he's allegedly coerced women into orgies that he called freak-offs. Diddy has denied all charges against him. Attorneys in the trial are expected to screen up to 150 people before opening statements begin on May 12th. Chipotle has launched a game on Roblox for Cinco de Mayo at 6 p.m. today. You can win a free burrito by playing the ingredient quest in the Burrito Builder experience on Roblox. The game can be accessed at roblox.com/Chipotle. The first 50,000 players to gather all 53 unique ingredient cards will be able to unlock a free entree offer.
WBSM Sports.
The Red Sox lost to the Twins yesterday, 5-4. Sox host the Rangers tonight at 6:45. And it's Celtics and Knicks game one at the Garden tonight at 7.
Now your ABC 6 South Coast forecast, brought to you by C Street.
Clouds and showers are going to stay with us right through the morning. Once we get into the afternoon, we're just going to hold on to the clouds. Then the evening, the clouds, the showers, and the fog will be prevalent as we finish out the day. Look for a high of 62. For tonight, we're looking for showers, patchy fog, and a low near 52. And for Tuesday, look for an overcast sky, showers, patchy fog, and even the chance of thunderstorms. Your Tuesday high near 64. From the ABC 6 Weather Center, I'm meteorologist Kelly Bates on New Bedford's News Talk Station 1420 WBSM.
I'm Mike Roberts, WBSM News. Stay up to date with New Bedford's News Talk Station WBSM and get breaking news alerts and all of our content with the WBSM app. This WBSM News Update is brought to you by Stevie's Wine and Spirits. Look for the purple dot to try before you buy. Only at Stevie's Wine and Spirits in Fairhaven.
All right, we are back with New Bedford City Council President Shane Burgo, and we're taking your calls, 508-996-0500, your app chat messages on the WBSM app. So I was saying earlier this morning that former New Bedford Police Chief Paul Oliveira had a very in-depth discussion with Jack Spillane of New Bedford Light. You can not only read Jack's column about it at newbedfordlight.org, but you can read the full transcript of their conversation and hear the audio. So there's going to be no mistaking in the reporting and the way that this was conveyed. And it's very eye-opening in seeing the way that not only how Chief Oliveira has internalized all of this that's been going on, but also in the way that some of the Globe reporting might have been twisted in a way that for the story that they were trying to present. But long-winded way of saying he has now retired. His retirement kicked in on Saturday. And which I didn't realize was tied into his birthday, that's what the date was all about. It was tied into his birthday. But also, we do have an acting police chief now.
Yes, it's my understanding that Derek Belong will be our acting police chief as we continue our search. The search committee, now the application process is closed, I believe, and in the next couple of weeks, depending on everyone's schedule. I believe they'll look through all the different applications that have come through. We have a handful of individuals that have applied. They'll go through that screening process. That, you know, the search committee that has been announced will interview only a number of those individuals that have applied. And then based on that, they'll put forward, I believe, 2 to 3 names to the mayor, who will then make the decision for the one person that he would like to put forward to the council. And then the council will confirm or deny that chief.
I mean, how do you feel as council president about that process? Do you feel like that is a good way to go about trying to find the right candidate?
Sure. You know, I think especially based on, you know, I did have some discussions with people over the weekend that, you know, felt, you know, how were some of the people chosen or what have you. But I think, you know, having the different mix of individuals, you know, community leaders, you know, people from neighborhood groups, business owners, people, you know, the president of the NAACP, you know, counselors, different people from walks of life. Some people mentioned that maybe they should have had people, you know, different youth, you know, but I think then you have the search community being, you know, like 100 people at
right.
that point. But
and then it's harder to get people to kind of come to any kind of decisions,
yeah,
when they have that many people.
But ultimately, you know, I think at the end of the day, it's all, the mayor's going to make the final, you know, decision of who he's going to put forward, and then the council, the 11 of us, then also make our decision on it. But I think based on what we're seeing, obviously in Fall River, if you've been following along with what's happening there, I think this was a smarter way to go in terms of transparency, I guess, is the word that some people use when wanting to really comb through applications and making sure that people are being screened properly and making sure that there's somewhat of an open process here. I'm hoping that we'll get to see a full list of those who have applied, and essentially if there's a rubric, and so, you know, I don't know if we'll get to see kind of like notes of like, you know, why did they select the 2 to 3 people that were put forward or what have you in that regard. But yeah, I think that this is a pretty standard and fair process if everything goes as according to plan. And it will be interesting to see who comes forward. A number of people that I have talked to in the community about this, I think. What's troubling from what I've heard is that some people feel as though we should go with an outside hire based on, you know, some of the controversy that we've heard from the Boston Globe. And I think you and I had touched on this in previous interviews that I don't think that should be something that concerns. Again, as I mentioned before, we have a number of individuals within our force that do amazing work every day to protect the men and women in our community, and I don't think that should at all hinder our decision process when it comes to career advancement.
And that could be seen, you know, through whatever lens people want to see it through. If you go with an outside hire, they say, okay, you know, they wanted to bring somebody in that's going to have a different perspective from what's going on. Other people might say, well, they had to bring in somebody from the outside because everybody inside is so corrupt. Mm-hmm. Like, the people are going to twist it however they want to twist it. I'm a fan of promoting from within, because otherwise, what are you doing the job for if there's no career advancement for you?
Exactly. And I just think it sends the wrong message, again, to the rank and file police officers that show up every day to protect and serve our residents and are doing everything correctly. And I truly believe that we have amazing men and women on our police force. And I always harp on the fact that the biggest common misconception about me is that I don't back and support our men and women in blue. I know we have many exemplary men and women on our police force that I know have gone above and beyond, that wear that badge every day, that I know would be excellent chiefs. So I think that we really need to do a thorough screening process and give first priority to, and I've said this many times before, to internal applicants. You know, not just because they're internal applicants, but mainly, well, I guess because they're internal applicants, but the reason why internal applicants are, to me, above and beyond external is because they know our force, they know the community, they've been here, and that, to me, puts them above the rest when it comes time to make decisions about things that are going to affect the community. It's important for the top person to understand what's going on here in New Bedford and understand the people in the community, the culture, all of those the things that factor into keeping a community safe. I think that's important when you're talking about the person who's going to lead this police force.
I mean, I don't want to make it a sports, you know, metaphor, but so often, you know, you see when people bring in an outside coach, they bring in, like when the Celtics hired Rick Pitino, they bring in an outside guy who's going to come in and kind of upset the apple cart. And, you know, that's fine because you're trying to build something different, except for the fact that he had no understanding of the personnel and the people that were there. And, you know, that was a big part of why he failed. And that happens a lot in, you know, bringing people from the outside in any walk of life. They don't know the inner workings, and unless they're willing to learn and understand, it can go south pretty quickly.
Yeah.
And especially where we've now had the police union vote no confidence in what the last two chiefs, you know, you've got to be aware of those kind of things.
Mm-hmm.
So 508-996-0500. Let's take our next break, and we'll be back in a few moments with Council President Burgo. All right, we are back with New Bedford City Council President Shane Burgo. We've got a call on the line, so let's take that. Good morning. You're next with the Council President.
Good morning, gentlemen. Just want to check in and say blessed and fun Cinco de Mayo to any of my Latino friends and anybody. It's kind of like St. Patrick's Day. You don't have to be Irish or Latino or Mexican to enjoy it and appreciate it.
Absolutely.
Have a good one.
All right, you too. I do have a question for you. I don't know if you've gotten any kind of update on Mr. Mendez, the gentleman that was taken by ICE.
Oh, from the car, right?
Yeah.
So actually, yes, yesterday we were at International Workers' Day. His wife, the woman who was recording in the car, Mary Lou, was actually sharing that he's still being detained. And it's my understanding that the hope is that he'll be released soon. I believe one of the dates that was mentioned was May 8th, if I'm not mistaken, that's the hope that he'll finally be able to come home May 8th.
So you haven't had a chance to talk to him or go up and see him or anything?
No, but I'm hoping that he'll eventually be reunited with his family, that he'll be able to come home and not have any further disruption with the situation. But yeah, that's been quite hell for his family and the chaos. And this goes back to, again, our discussion around why due process is so important, and why we can understand why he wanted to wait for his lawyer to show up and not follow, as people said, if he just followed instructions,
Still would have been taken into custody.
Yeah. And now he's been, how long ago was the situation? He still has not been released when they have the wrong guy. He's not, you know, and I think the reason why he's being held this long is because they're looking for something to be able to say, oh, we didn't make another mistake.
Yeah, what would have been different if he had just gotten out of the car? What would have been different than the situation that he's in right now? I don't think anything.
Yeah, I was going to say the only difference is that they wouldn't have had to smash the windows. They wouldn't have looked as bad as they look now. And so that's the only difference.
But if he does end up being there for a prolonged period of time, would you consider paying him a visit or...?
I don't know if I necessarily would, and the reason for that is because every time I'm asked, I'll tell you, I've been asked, I think criticized more so than asked, but I have a lot of angry constituents that are disappointed in me, is the word I'll use. You know, there's been a number of demonstrations and protests where a number of people are upset with me that I haven't done more around the issue of immigration. And what I keep explaining to my constituents is that I'm not in a position to do anything about immigration,
right,
as a city councilor. And so, and I think for them, they're a bit shocked and disappointed by that answer, because one of my rallying cries that I've always said, even as a candidate before I was elected as city councilor, is that there's always something we can do, you know, and what we lack in, legislative power, we make up for in influence. And so even though that is still true in this situation as for immigration, for me, if I, you know, I could go visit him or I could do something in that regard, but to me, it would just be very performative. And so in a way, it'd be insulting to kind of go mm-hmm. and just in a sense, it would be like parading him around for political stuff.
Seems like a photo op more than anything.
Yeah, and so to
whether there's photos or not.
But, yeah, you know. And it would just, to me, it'd be more disrespectful to him and to his family to just use him as a prop to be able to say, oh, yes, this is why, because I really have no other authority. You know, having conversations with, you know, Congressman Keating's office, who, you know, we need to do more, obviously, with our immigration laws to make it easier for people to become documented. But as we know, in situations like this one, and also the gentleman that was sent to El Salvador, they are doing everything the right way is what we often hear. Well, they just need to do it the right way. And these individuals that the stories that are breaking now that we're emphasizing, these are individuals who have been doing it the right way and are following the
right,
terrible just, immigration laws that we
just
do
because
have.
The right way isn't the way that it should be.
Yeah. And the immigration laws have been, become even stricter and harder to follow. And these people have still found a way to follow those strict immigration laws. And then even so have found themselves locked up. And so that's what's frustrating for me. So I will continue to advocate for us to make those reforms. And I will continue to advocate for this administration, the Trump-Vance administration, or the Trump-Vance-Musk administration, to be more compassionate. But obviously, as we know, that they don't have that ability because, as I mentioned before, they are all about chaos and destruction and fear because they don't have actual policy. And that's what I told people a lot of times. It's easy to just sign an executive order, but it's a lot harder to pass laws. It's a lot harder to build consensus. It's a lot harder to get other people from across party lines or even your own party, the Republican Party, which they have all branches of government. I would even say the Supreme Court is a very conservative Supreme Court at this point. You have all branches of government on your side, and you, for some reason, can't use this time to pass laws and to get things codified into law on your side. Instead, you're using the time to make memes and to cause fear and division and scare people into thinking that you're powerful when you're not.
But, you know, they troll the libs, so that's what matters. I got to take a break here. I see calls coming in. We'll try to get to them, but I don't know that we'll have the time. We'll be right back. All right, we only have about a minute left with Council President Burgo, and I know there's some neighborhood meetings you want to make everybody aware of.
Yes, so tonight, Monday, Cinco de Mayo, at 6:30 p.m., we have the North End Neighborhood Group, which we know is led by the community leader, Scott Pemberton. But our city council liaison who helps him with that is Ward 2 City Councilor Maria Giesta. So that's tonight at the Global Learning Charter Public School. And that's tonight at 6:30 p.m. And then tomorrow night, which is Tuesday, May 6th at 6 p.m., we have the Cove Street Neighborhood Group. That's at 3 Rodney French Boulevard. That's the community leader, Celine Sariva, and our city council liaison is Ward 6 City Councilor Ryan Pereira. And then on Wednesday night, Wednesday, May 7th, that is 7 p.m., we have the Ward 5 Neighborhood Group, and that's at the Buttonwood Warming House, and that is led by our city councilors, Naomi Carney and Joe Lopes.
Look at